So it is the end of the world as we know it. But it's not that dramatic yet, and we will be fine. And as you can tell from the song, I didn't pick the REM version, first of all, because I couldn't get the permissions from such a big band, but in good old-fashioned Canadian, I figured out a way to get a local band that had rights to it that allowed me to play it in public. So a little bit about me. My name is Pierre Roman. I'm a technical evangelist for Microsoft Canada. I deal with IT pros on a regular basis, and it just went really loud all of a sudden. And I've been, just like you, started my career the help desk. First on the help desk, managing the help desk, managing the networks, moved my way up into consulting, moved my way up all the way to a boardroom as a director of IT operations for a multinational covering all of Canada and Northeast US. But then I realized that management was not for me. Running reports and budgets, I'd rather get my hands into the technology, which brought me back to being a geek. I was going to say that I'm a Habs fan and that this session is in between me and the game, but legal removed the Habs logo from my deck. But I do realize that I'm sitting between you and a good evening, so we're going to get it going. So the agenda, today we're going to talk about Server 2003 R2 and the support status. We're going to talk about migration foundation services. And when I say migration services, is basically the services that everything else is built on top of. So Active Directory, DNS, DHCP, your file and print, your DFS, your like all of that. We're not going to talk about migrating Exchange off of 2003 or SharePoint or whatever other workload you're running. Because first of all, we only have 75 minutes. If we had a full day, maybe we could cover some of them, but 75 minutes, we kind of have to keep it short. Very quickly, we'll talk about the ongoing management, resources, and next steps. So considering it's 5 o'clock, last session of the day, and there's a fair number of you guys in here, I assume that, show of hands, how many are you running 2003 servers in your environments? All of you. Great. I have seen some stats out there that tell me that there's approximately 52% of physical servers in the US, physical server, not virtual, that are still running 2003. And that means that the end of support for 2003 is 426 days from now. And optimistically speaking, server migration takes about 200 days to plan and execute. And if you put applications on top of that, that's an extra 300 days. So if you have not started, sorry about your luck. So who has actually started? Good, good, good. And what does end of support mean? I think we've all lived through it the last few weeks and the last couple months with the XP. It means no updates. And so far in 2013, 37 updates, critical updates, were released for Server 2003 R2. I don't have the numbers yet for 2014, but in a year from now, we will stop. No more updates. And we do mean that. That means no compliance. So if you have a PCI, so the payment card industry, so if you're dealing with Amex, Visa, or anything like that, you will not be compliant and they will stop doing business with you. There is no safe haven. You can't say, well, I'm just going to virtualize my box and it'll keep running. No, still not supported. It doesn't matter if your hoster or your virtualization provider tells you that they support it, we won't. And now is the time to act. Actually, a year ago was the time to act, but if you haven't done that, now is the time to start. So let me go back. I skipped one. So why do we talk about migration and not upgrade? And I think it was in 2010 that my buddy Rick did a session on that, and there was the same questions and the same answers are still valid. Well, migrating versus upgrading provides you an upgrade path from 32-bit. You cannot put a DVD into a 32-bit machine and install 64-bit operating system. You can do physical to virtual and vice versa by doing a migration, not by doing an upgrade. You can do it to a full server or to a server core and vice versa. So if you're a 2003 box, you're moving into 2012, you can drop it down to a server core. I'm a huge fan of server cores. Don't have to patch them as much. Don't use that many resources. And I'm a big fan of standardizing or segmenting where I do my management from. So each person that used to work in my shops would have on their machines the management tool to manage the server. We would access the servers directly as little as possible. Plus, server core means that you don't have anything like IE or other things. And in 2003, I think there were things like Outlook Express on a server. Why the hell would you want to put that there? It's a server. It's not a workstation. Treat it as such. Somebody yesterday said, treat your servers like cattle, not pets. So that's what we're going to do. Migrating also allows you to do clean install, so you don't end up with all the leftovers that was on that server before. And it reduces your downtime, because if something goes wrong in your migration, your original server is still there. Because how many times do we start something and it fails about 85% all the way? But then you realize that you've just overwritten what was there before, so you start hunting for the tape. So it's not always that easy, but it actually, if you do a migration, it gives you a backout scenario. So the migration process, like I said, I've been in the business for 25 years. The process has never changed. The tools have changed. The technology has changed. How we do it, like in terms of physically do it, has changed. But the planning process has never changed. First, we need to discover what we have. So you catalog your applications. If you've got 4,000 line of business applications, discover them, figure it out. And then assess them, categorize them. Are they business critical? Are they business important? Are they, well, we're not quite sure who actually uses it. We have used, and I say we because I want to protect the names of the innocents that were with me at the time, we've used the SCREAM method. I don't know if you ever used that. So you have an application running on a server, and you have no idea who owns the application and who's using it. Shut it down and wait to see somebody screams. I don't necessarily recommend it like as a blanket method, but once everything else has failed, it's something you can try. All right, so assess them. So you know you have, let's say, 10% of your application are absolutely business critical. So those need to be tested absolutely all the way through. The important ones, depends. Depends on how much time you have, depends on how much budget you have, depends on how much resources you have. Because you all know that testing an application for user acceptance testing takes a long time. So the more you do, and do I need to go back to the slide, 426 days left? You may not have that amount, that luxury to actually test every single application. So categorizing them is critical for you to actually prioritize what you're gonna test. Target, identify what you're gonna move to. This is a perfect opportunity. A problem is always an opportunity in disguise. To figure out, do I want to host this myself? Do I want to keep this on-premise? Or is this something that should move up to the cloud? I'm not saying, because cloud, how dare you to say cloud again for anybody that's seen the presentation yesterday. But it is an opportunity for you to evaluate whether or not that workload is something that should reside in the cloud. If it's that critical, it needs to be up all the time, and it needs to be reliable and accessible anywhere, then maybe that's the answer. So there's your your opportunity. So target, identify the target location of everything that you're going to move. And fourth step is the actual migration, which is typically the easiest or in shortest piece of that whole equation. So how many people have done their discovery? Oh, fair number. I'm impressed. How many people have assessed all their applications? Oh, a few less hands. How many people have actually identified the target where those applications will live? Okay, we're now going back down. And have people have actually started the migration? Okay, all right. So in our little environment, because we're going to go through some of these, in our little environment, we have like a DC, a 2003 DC, a 2003 file server. It's hosting a domain-based DFS. We have a couple printers and a Windows 8 client, and we're going to move that to identify our targets to the DC and the file server. Very simple environment. Everything's running off of my little laptop here. So we're just going to go through it just to kind of get a feel that it's not that complicated once you've done your planning. But before we start, I would ask you to stand up, but that's fine. It's end of the day. But we'll all take the pledge together, okay? I pledge to do my due diligence. I plan to plan my upgrade, to back up my system before I touch it. I promise to take more time to do my planning than the length of this session. This session does not replace your planning. You can't just like pick my deck at the end of the day and put that in your document and fill a few fields. It's not gonna help you. So help me, Satya. So first thing we're gonna do in terms of setting up our environment is prepare the tools. Microsoft has put together a set of tools that are on 2012. To allow you to migrate a lot of those foundation services from 2003 to 2012 without having to resort to internet-based, maybe not quite sure where they came from kind of scripts that may be out there. Because we all do it. I'm the first one to pillage and plunder the internet when I need the script to do something. But, yes. Is it? Well, we don't have that set up here, but would they work? Would this migration process work? I don't see why not. As long as your forest, your DCs are migrated first. So first, we want to verify when we install the tools that the servers have sufficient space. 23 megs should not be a problem on a server, but I have seen some strange things in my days. .NET Framework 2 installed on the 2003 servers, and at the very minimum, PowerShell 1.0 installed on those 2003 servers. Once we have the tools, it's very straightforward to install them. So let's just do it. Unless you guys want to see the extra 985 slides I've got. No, just kidding. So I am in my virtual environment, and I go to my DC, and I'll start PowerShell, and I'm a terrible typist, so I have copied, because nobody wants to see me fumble through a cut and paste or anything. So the first one is very easy. We're on a 2012 box. You can use the server manager if you want. I'm a big fan of PowerShell, because if I'm going to do something once, I'll do it in the GUI. If I know I'm going to do something 10 times, 20 times, or I don't know how many times, I'm going to put a script together. So I'm a lazy admin. So first, I'm going to install it on my file server. So remotely, I'm installing. So I'm taking advantage of the 2012 capabilities to do remote management. I'm installing a remote feature onto a, 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 a feature onto a remote machine, so that's done. And now I'm just going to install it on that machine that I'm currently on. Doesn't take very long. There we go. So now I will go to my server, go to Windows System 32, because now it's installed on my 2012 server, but I have not prepared, the package that I'm going to install on a 2003 box. Because if my server is a 64-bit server, I'm going to prepare that to install on my 2003 box. In this case, I'm just going to run the SMIG deploy application. And we'll just look at the command line once I've copied it. So server migration deploy package, so I want to group what I want, and I want an architecture of AMD 64, because in this case, my 2003 servers are 64 bits. It's the only CD I could find, because I haven't touched 2003 in a long time. And I'm going to package it for Windows Server 2003, and I'm going to store that into a path that's in my DFS on my domain. So I run it, it installs it. If I go to my DFS path under MIG tools, here's my new package. So as far as it's being run locally on my 2012 box, we're done. Pretty easy, right? On my 2003 boxes, so we'll start with the DC, go to my MIG tools, copy that package locally, and then once it's finished copying, I'm going to run the SMIG deploy as well. It installs it and then starts a PowerShell command window that has the module loaded and prepared and ready to start my migration. So I got to do this on all my servers, and just for the sake of time, I've already done it on my other server, and you can find it in Administrative Tools, Server Migration Tool, and you have your PowerShell command right there. So that's it. We're done with prepping the tools. Not very hard, but something you have to take care of before you start. Before you start your actual migration, not before you start your planning. So now you're done. The next thing that we're going to do is, what is the basis of all of our networks? Active Directory, correct? And what's the one thing that most IT pros are afraid of? Screwing up AD, yes. And that translates into whenever you tell somebody, oh, now you now have to update your schema. Ooh, so I gotta do my forest prep, I gotta do my domain prep, I gotta do all that. We don't really need to do this anymore. All we need to make sure is that the main and our forest are at a 2003 level. Then all we have to do is insert a 2012 DC into our environment, promote it, transfer the FISMO roles. Once that's done, we upgrade the domain and the forest functional level, and then decommission the 2003 servers. So you can get, and yes, if you've got multiple forest or sorry, go ahead. Yes. Yes. Did I say it reverse? Okay, sorry about that. So you do have to raise the functional levels after you get rid of all your 2003 DCs. Thank you for catching that. So let's go on it and get it done. So we've got our 2003 box, my domain controller, that's my server. So I'm here. It's a 2012 box. It's got nothing really specific installed. So you can add roles and feature. Now we've all seen how to get this done. And we install the domain services and add the features, yes, 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 and install. That part is pretty straightforward. The next part is almost as straightforward. Sometimes you do have to make sure that you pick the right site in which you're going to import your or insert your domain controller. But figuring out your target and where you're putting things should have been part of your plan, correct? All right, so that's almost running. As soon as it's finished, we're going to DC promo this. The DC promo process is the same. It's the same name, but the bits and the guts and the processes that it actually does internally has changed tremendously from, especially from 2003 to 2012. It does a series of check and prerequisite check ahead of time to make sure that nothing will fail. So it won't start the update to the domain or to the schema unless it's actually sure that it can talk to all of the schema master, it can talk to all of the DCs that it needs to, and so on. So now I'm complete, it's done. Okay, it's installed. Oh, I got to do the refresh, of course, because the server manager is on a time, is on a polling, not a real time, and I'm going to promote this server. Of course, it's already picked my domain. It's already found my domain. I'm going to use the server or the user I've already have. And we've all seen this. Anybody here has not gone through promoting a 2012 DC? No? Okay, so I'll go really quick on that. We cannot do read-only domain controllers because it's a 2003 functional level domain, so it won't allow me to. And once it's figured out the site names, domain controller, see, that's the, that's what I was saying. It can't do the read-only domain controller because of the functional level. Give it a password. Next. Delegation of the DNS server cannot be been created. Tenet2014.com is not a server, it's not a domain that I own, and I cannot access the stored of authority to actually insert a new server record in there. So that's why it's telling me that it can't find its parent zone. Install from any domain. Use a default. Click yes. Next. It's going to do check my prerequisite. Once it's verified that the prerequisites are there, it's then going to go and prep my domain, prep my forest. That takes a little bit of time. Oh, there we go. So it found some stuff, but nothing that can stop it. There's just things that need to be said. So if you've got NT4, does anybody still have NT4 in this room? Oh, my God. Okay, well, you may have some issues there because the crypto algorithm may not allow you to connect an NT4. So if there is a problem with NT4 or something like that, the prerequisite check will have links to information that will allow you to do it. But I'm just going to go ahead and install it. And before I switch back to the slides, I'll just run a right now. Upgrading the forest. So it is doing the schema update. It is doing what it needs to do in order to make a DC. So the process is a lot more straightforward than most people think. It's not that complicated to upgrade your Active Directory. And once your Active Directory is created or upgraded, everything else kind of falls into place. So this is going to take a while because it needs to install and then it needs to reboot. And because we've only got about 50 some minutes left, let's jump back. So once we've got our Active Directory, we demote our servers, we remove them, we clean out the metadata, we clean out the DNS and so on. So we've all seen, I think, who was in the Rick Claus and Joey Snow session yesterday on upgrading your SQLs? Okay, so they've gone through that already. So I'm not going to go through that and clean all the DNS and clean everything else. If you want to know how to do it, if you haven't done it, check out the replay of their session, and you'll be able to set it done. So once everything is done, then next logical thing would be to update your DNS. It's probably the easiest part of your migration if your DNS is part of the integrated zone. It's taking a little longer than I expected. If it's already a part of an integrated zone, because if your zone is an AD and you've introduced a new 2012 server, on our server, it's actually installed the DNS components. Actually, it's not completely finished. It's probably what it's doing right now. But it is installing the DNS component. So if your zone is already in Active Directory, then you're done. So all you need to do is allow it to replicate, make sure to go back to your DHCP server, change the address of your DNS to point to that new DC, and pretty much your DNS migration is done. Now, one of the things that's most likely going to happen is that you're going to end up with zones or flat zones or file-based zones that are in your environment. So how many people here actually run file-based zones in their environment? Two. Okay. It's not that uncommon anyway, but I was expecting a few more than that. So flat file zones, what are you going to do with them? You're going to recreate them one by one? No, you want to export them from your 2003, clean it out, clean up those files before you import them back into 2012. And my server's just rebooting now, so we're almost good to go. As soon as it reboots, we're going to jump into doing your standalone. So you export and copy your zone information, your registry information, all of that good stuff that's in your 2003 server, and we can start doing it now while the other machine reboots. So if I'm on my box here, and again, go to my migration, because I can't type. And it's fairly straightforward. All you have to do is stop the service, export your registry keys, copy all your files, which is because those DNS are going to be flat files, copy them over, and then start your service. Then once you've got that info, you get very easily on the source. It's always a two-part process. A migration is always a two-part process. You got to plan and prepare your source, then put the information somewhere that the destination can grab it, and grab it and bring it back down. So let's stop our service. Okay, we're gonna export the first registry. And I'll make those commands available. So if you wanna just look them up. Export the second one, and I'm pretty much done. So I'm just going to take that and copy it to the domain or to a network share that the other server can get to it. Done. Now, these files that I have here, and I would like to zoom into it, but I don't have Zoomit installed on that virtual machine. There's things we don't need. We don't need the backup. We certainly don't need the samples. And the cache and the logs. And now if we look at the reg information that's in here, the first one's okay. So the service basically tells Active Directory or the DNS server where the server that we're exporting, where it came from. So it's just got a bit of information on it. That's fine. The second one, if we do an edit of that one, you'll notice that it already has the information about the zone or the reverse lookup zone that was in Active Directory. That zone has already been migrated, so we don't want to touch it. We don't want to migrate it a second time. We risk doing other things. So we'll delete that. The 192 zone is my zone for my flat file. So okay, I'll keep that one there. It's called Contoso. We'll leave that information there. And then the 10.20.14 information, we don't need. So we'll remove it. Save it. And now we're ready to jump to our target. See when I told you I couldn't type? There we go. So now we have our server. Server manager is going to load, and you'll see that the DNS service is actually now up and running. And my zone are there. So my forward looking zone, I got my domain, everything there, but it's missing the Contoso zone that we have in the other one. So pretty straightforward. Go back to our Did I restart the service? No. So I'm going to have a hard time finding where my domain control is. Because, should be cached. Let's try it. I've had some issues with that. Oh, I found it. Okay, good. Go to my migration, my script, and we basically do it in reverse. In a command window. Okay, stops my service. And I have a community party to go to. So I'll go to my DNS information, run and import the two registry files that we exported and cleaned. Copy the files that we need. And start our DNS. So if you've got multiple zones, you've got to do this multiple times, especially if you've got that zone is hosted on several different DNS servers in your environment. And that goes back to process number one, is to do your discovery. Figure out what you have, where it is, and document it. Because we all have our as-built document that are up to date, correct? Right? In an Excel spreadsheet or some large Word document. And we all know where it is, right? You guys are better than me. So if I go back to my tools, my DNS management, and then my forward lookup zone, I now have my Contoso. In my reverse zone, I now have the address that my Contoso test domain or test group is in. So we're done. We have migrated our DNS. Wasn't that hard, was it? Every portion of your migration will be as simple, and I'm talking about foundation services, or I am not talking about migrating Exchange. Migrating Exchange off of a 2003 box to any other box will require a lot more time and preparation than your foundation services. But this needs to be done prior to. So it's very important. It's the planning part is the part that we normally do the least amount of time on, and this is what we should be doing the most of your time on. So now we've migrated our DNS. One of the things we need to do that I've not done yet is we have to go back to our DHCP servers now and just update all that information. If I'm going to remove the DNS from my old server, there's all kinds of cleanup to do, but I just didn't want to have to do the cleanup here today because we only have about a small amount of time. If you have any questions or anything, feel free to raise your hand or just shout it out. I prefer to have my, yes? What is the best method that I have found to retain the original name of the DC and the IP address, correct? Okay, fair question, and actually something that I forgot to put in the slide, but I was going to talk about it. Once your 2003 domain has been decommissioned and it's gone. Chances are that you've got tons of users that have hard-coded share names or whack IP address pointing to it that's going to be somewhere where it's going to be hard-coded. So all you have to do, in your DNS, in your zone, go in and create a new CNAME record. Put the name of the first, wait, you have to wait till it's out of the domain and the replication has been done so you don't have collision. Then you create a CNAME with the original name of the machine that points to the new machine. So that you retain the name. Or did you want to just change the domain, the machine name itself? Is that was your question?
I haven't had much luck with CNAMEs.
You haven't had much luck with CNAMEs? Okay, so the question, the comment was that it had some issues with CNAME. I have not personally had any or any major issues with the CNAME. No, and the IP address would just have to go to the networking stack of your server and add it as a secondary address. So you're... No, then the question, the comment was that when you migrate or you change that IP address, there's always a timing issue that comes into play. That's one of the drawbacks of reusing the IP address. In a perfect world, nobody would be hard-coded to it, but it's gonna happen. So I guess we now default back to the scream method. So once that IP address is gone and something fails, then you say, oh, you shouldn't have done it this way. But we all understand that that's not always possible. So you mitigate that by adding a second IP address and doing either a CNAME or a domain controller rename. Then when you're doing the rename, you're introducing a whole new set of potential problems. But this is things you have to test in your lab. You want to set up a lab? Rick and Joey showed you how to actually create an image of your environment in lab using state backup. That has been successful? Yeah. Well, once your server is actually decommissioned, the original server, you can actually change the address of the second server to match that IP address. But you have to decommission the first one. You have to make sure that there's enough time. Exactly. So the comment is, it's the timing issue. So once you've decommissioned your server, the minute that box is turned off, don't run off to the second box and put the IP address in. You're going to end up with a lot of problems. Let it sit for a while. It's like a good stew. You have to let it bubble up, or a good wine. Hopefully not a good cheese, because we don't want to let it collect some mold on top. Yes. So the comment, just so everybody hears it, and guys, there's four mics there, so if you're, yeah, go ahead.
So for those of you that didn't hear, there is a reg hack you can implement that allows NetBIOS to be able to service requests that are coming in to the server under a different name. It's a NetBIOS restriction on the newer versions of the OS that it doesn't like, you know, having an old server name, even though you have a CNAME record.
That's correct. So whenever you you have NetBIOS name resolution, then you can get into WINS, and you get into NetBIOS resolution within the immediate subnet.
And of course, you probably want to add in a static WINS if you still have WINS.
However, I want to make sure that everybody understands that putting hacks into the registry may not be supported. So if something actually breaks and you try to help, to ask for help, you may find yourself that you've gotten yourself out of support by it.
There is a TechNet article on this particular.
There is a TechNet article? Okay.
That's where we found it.
Okay.
The other thing that we run into is that we have, for example, you know, after you've done your first 2012 RTDC is that you have another server with 2012 ready to go. As soon as you get rid of the old one, you rename this one, bring over the IP to the old IP, and promote it up. So you have very quickly thereafter a new domain controller under the same name and IP to replace the old one that's been decommissioned, allowing, of course, for AD replication.
Yeah, but all of that information, all of those steps that you're going to do, will have to take place in your planning section, because if you do have NetBIOS and you still have applications that have NetBIOS, then you have to plan for that to make sure that by the time you get there, it's there. Same thing with application. If you've got, who's got 16-bit applications in their environment? Not a whole lot, but there's still a few. You have 8-bit application? Okay, I'm not talking to you. If you've got 16-bit applications in your environment, when you set up your file servers to host the data or files that those 16-bit applications are going to use, by default in 2012, the server is not going to generate the 8.3 file names. So your 16-bit applications will fail. So that, again, needs to be absolutely in your discovery to figure out, do I have 16-bit apps? Yes. Where does the data that these 16-bit app reside? Is it on a network share or is it local? If it's on a network share, when I move that network share, when I create that volume, because it can't be changed on the fly, when I create that volume, I got to make sure that that volume has got that little checkbox in the share creation dialog box on 2012 R2 that says generate short file name. You don't do that, the applications won't be able to find the files that it needs. So back to planning, discovery, and assessing. That's pretty much the point of this session, is to talk about the migration part is straightforward as long as you've done everything else properly. So with a DHCP, DHCP is a bit more touchy, though. DHCP, you can migrate it from 2003 to 2012. You have to make sure that you match the number of NICs on your servers, because that affects your binding. And you have to export all the stuff on your DHCP. You have to deauthorize it from the Active Directory, move it across, import it, change your bindings, make sure that your bindings are set properly. And once that's set, then reauthorize it and it'll go. In most environments, you have a bit of a window, because machines have by default, I think it's an 8-hour or eight, can't remember what the time to live of a DHCP lease is, but you can adjust that. It's 8 hours, right? It's afterlife, it'll renew at half of that. So you still have a bit of a window. It doesn't take that long to actually migrate it, but you gotta make sure that you do it within that window. So check what your time to live is. If your time to live is too short and you start your migration, by the time you're finished, the machines will start failing before you're finished. And of course, we all do server migration in a planned downtime environment, correct? Yes, because our boss always liked to say, I'm going to take down the network for a day while I do the upgrade. It's not. Pardon me? There are a few. Some are more cowboyish than others. I will show you a quick way of getting it done that I have tested over and over again and haven't had any issues with. So on our server, and on my DC, go to my migration tools that I've installed earlier, and using PowerShell, I'll stop the service. I will use an export to export the information that's on that server. So all the DHCP information, lease information, scope options, server options, and so on. It asks me for a password because it's storing that onto the in our share, and goes out, and okay, and then we can see from the verbose what it actually stores. So the IP, the configuration for both IPv6, IPv4. I don't have any IPv6 set up, so I'll get to it. And all of the information and options that are in that server. Yes. So which version of PowerShell is that command in? That version, it's in the migration tools. It's a module. Migration tools inserts a module into your machine that when you start the PowerShell from that location in your menu, it actually imports the module. Yes? Okay, so the question is why, like what's happening in the background so that, because in his environment, he's tried that method, and some export on servers will run for 9 minutes, then the other for 15 minutes, and the others for very short during time. It's depends on the number of leases that you have, depends on the number of reservations that you have, depends on the number of options that you have, depends of all of these, and the speed of the connection as to where you're saving that information. So all that comes into play in terms of how, but I don't have any information off the top of my head. No, no. So if I look in my DHCP server or in my network, I have the server migration.mig file that had stored all that information in there. I am at that point normally a big fan of just exporting all of my IP, TCP IP info, just so if something happens, I have the documentation as how I was set up. And you could use the NetSH to actually remove and delete the server from Active Directory and remove that. I prefer to do that one into the GUI. So if I go to my DHCP server, as you can tell, it's already stopped. So we're going to start it again. Where did I put these? There we go. And start that service. Done. Server local. Because right now we haven't actually done the migration, so we've just exported the info. We want to make sure that if somebody shows up with a phone or a tablet, because the more and more devices that we have in our environment, the more and more we rely on DHCP to actually give addresses. It's not like the good old days where every machine's at the desk and they get turned on in the morning and typically don't get turned off until Friday. So this is important. So we have our information there. I prefer to unauthorize it in the GUI as opposed to the NetSH. I've had some hit and miss with the NetSH. So while it's doing that, let's go to our other domain controller. Pardon me? Do I have to modify the new scope on the new server? No, what I have to modify is the binding on that new server. The scope itself, as long as I'm migrating it within the same area. Of course, if you take that DHCP from one site and you move it to another site, then yes, you have to adjust that. Exactly. I was going to just mention that. If you've got helper apps on routers, if you've got not just routers, if you've got zones that are replicated, you got to make sure that the replication partners are updated to see where that zone is now is hosted. So that all comes back down to our planning. Yes? I don't think there's a problem doing it in that order. And the question is it safe to do it in that order, or should you deauthorize the server before you export the information? I've always done it in this order: stop the service, export everything, then deauthorize it. Because sometimes you may not want to deauthorize it right away. You may want to deauthorize. You may want to leave that server running until, let's say, tomorrow morning. So if something, pardon me. Yes. Okay, so we go to my server, and I install the DHCP with the tools. Fairly straightforward. Once it's complete, I add my server migration snap-in from in PowerShell. Almost done, 91%. Okay, and I will import the settings from the location where we put it in. Asks me for the password I've already set, so it's kind of secure. It puts a password on it, so you can't, not somebody who's going to take that file. It's not a flat file that somebody can sniff and find out where all your servers and IP addresses are, even though they could find it. What happened here? Password. Complete my DHCP configuration, commit, yes. Importing, here we go. Now the order of when you start things is fairly important, as you just noticed. Okay, so it imported everything. One of the things that it did import that so now I can't find my other client. One of the things that it did import, wrong box, is if I look here for my DHCP, it's most likely changed the IP address of that server. This is something that happens not every time, but enough that you should put that into your plan as to check the bindings. We'll start the service, and typically the bindings will be out of whack. For some reason in the script, there we go, in the script, as part of the PowerShell script, one of the things that it does that is not really well documented is it goes and changes the IP address of the server that I just put it on. So right now it's 10, it should be 11. So the process actually changed the IP address of my server. Change it back. Close. Restart my service. My bindings should be there, and my domain, my name resolution will be fine. Yeah. There we go. So we have done our DHCP, we have done our DNS, we have done our Active Directory. The only things that are left to do is file and print. File and print is fairly straightforward. File and print, the only thing is the DFS portion of it that can be an issue. The easiest thing to do is to use the tools that you already have. The tools that you already have for DFS is going to be the DFS namespace process that is already there. So coexistence will be your friend on that one. You have a DFS, you have a server, it's in 2003, it's already up, it's already running, it already has shares. Insert into that domain DFS space a second server running 2012. Make sure that everything is set up properly. Once it's set up, create a replication group, insert those, your old 2003 server and your new 2012 server into that replication group, and just let nature take its course. It's going to run for a few days, depending on how much data you have and depending whether or not those servers are in the same sites or across sites. Slow WAN link will get in the way, but you can dictate how much bandwidth you're going to use for that, and then you just let the replication happen. Once the replication has happened and your data is on the other server completely moved across to the 2012 box, then all you need to do is decommission, remove the 2003 from the DFS namespace, and then decommission the box. Your DFS namespace will be kept. Your resolution, because both servers are there, it's in DNS, it's in the domain, both servers will be known. So when a workstation will go and try to access whack whack 10 of 2014.com/public, that DFS route will be found into the closest server in your site, or the closest one to your site. So that's pretty straightforward. So DFS, join the DFS namespace, use the replication, and once that's done, remove them. For the other shares and the other data, we'll use the tools that are available. So we set up the 2003 server to ship all of that information, so share name, data, permissions, group membership, all of that information using the migration tool from one server to the other. Once that's done, that'll take a while, but once that's done, then all you need is to change. Now we go back to the problem we had earlier. Can't remember which gentleman over here mentioned it, that if you have people that have hard-coded the server names for those shares, then you have to deal with that. A CNAME will be fine if it's doing, should be fine. Or you want, if it's a file server, you can just rename it. Renaming a file server doesn't involve a lot of domain reconfiguration. Yes?
Is there, like, the same thing for strict name checking in year 2012?
What do you mean? Well, in 2003, if you tried to find another name to it, and you had strict name checking enabled, it wouldn't accept any connection from the other name. Yeah. I haven't checked in 2012. I haven't run into that. I think it's still there, but I haven't run into problems with adding a second name to it. So for the other data, one of the caveats for that is that you have to open the firewall. So if I go to my DFS or my 2012 file server, and I look at my firewall, I have already pre-created two rules that open port 7000 TCP and port 7000 UDP on that server from the source server. So you can go, in this case, I just say on that port allow, but if you're in a secured environment, you can set up on that port allowed from this address and so on. So, but this has to be done before you start. And once that is set, you can go to your server. Again, in our migration tools, and it's a very straightforward command. From the migration tools in PowerShell, send server data to my target, the source path that I'm using, the target path that I'm going to use. Do I want to recurse all the directories? Do I want to include everything? And the end of the command. And I want to force it. So it's just going to send all the information. So I copy this, go to my command, set it. Of course, it wants a password. It goes there and then starts on the 2003 server. It's trying to send out, so the firewall tells me, hey, do you want to allow it? I will unblock it and let it go. And it goes into a wait mode until the target server connects back to it and say, all right, I'm ready, start shipping it. In this environment, or in any environment, there have a very short window. You have 5 minutes to actually get the target server to start receiving it. So what I prefer to do on my target computer, first of all, is I do a net file, because if I'm connecting to if there are already shares on there, and I want to make sure that there's no users that are connected to it. So I do a net file to tell me whether or not I've got open connection or open file connections that are there. Then I will stop the LANMAN server and force it to actually make sure that it doesn't have, it won't allow any new connection while I'm doing the copy. So this is something that's better done off time. Then I'm going to make sure that I'm in receive mode. Receive mode, and then I go and start with the password. It starts asking, or it starts listening on port 7000 for the source target that wants to send it information. Once it gets that information and starts going, it should be any time now. Oh, there we go. Receiving and decrypting data, because the data is encrypted in transit. If we look at our drive C locally, it's actually created the shared directory and created the information and starting to copy the data. Depending on the size of your shares, this will take a long time, and you'll have to do this for every share you have, or depending on how your shares are organized. If you've got a root directory with all the shares or all the repositories in that root directory, then just do the root directory and it'll do everything for you. If you've got multiple shares that are all on the root, let's say of your D drive, your data drive, and so on, then you'll have to, in your discovery, identify where those are, assess what you're going to do with it, find a target as to where you're going to put. Is it a good time for you to reorganize that? Because you get to pick the source and you get to pick the target. So you don't have to mirror it. Because we all get to a point where after Active Directory has been up for years, because Active Directory is like that workhorse. It just works. Not Active Directory, but I mean file and print. So you end up with a server. It's got shares. Over the years, somebody created it with whatever structure it has on now. You inherited it, but it's a lot of work to move things around. So take that opportunity. We talked about it. Takes the opportunity to the target. It's your one of the few moments where you actually have an excuse to tell your boss, yeah, I'm doing the migration, I'm going to reorganize this, and they're all going to be happy for it, and you're going to be happy for it, correct? How many people actually built all of the share structure that you have in your environment all right now, or did you all inherit them from? How many built their own? Okay, I don't see one hand up, so that's, oh, wait, one. So everybody else has inherited stuff. There's your opportunity to make it more structured. Make it structured into a way where you can use dynamic access control. If you haven't looked into dynamic access control, very, very powerful. It will allow you to actually manage the access to that data without always having to go back to the group membership. So if you haven't looked into dynamic access control, come and see me after. We'll have a short discussion with that.
Does this process also pull over the NTFS permission?
Yes. So now we're just going to let that run because it's going to take a while. So we've done our DFS. We've done our share and our data. It's moving. It's done. It's not like we're in a very small controlled environment here. In your own environments, it's going to take a lot more time and it's going to take a lot more planning, but it's not that complicated once you've identified where you're going to go, where you're going from, and where you're going to go. The print servers, again, the print server are not that complicated. When you go to a print server, the only real things you need to control is make sure that the drivers are still available. Use the built-in tools. Don't reinvent the wheel. There's no clear benefits for you to do everything manually. In print server itself, there is the capability, sorry, to actually just, once your role is installed, just from print server, it's all I need for now. Once your role is installed, to use the tool that it gives you, the management tool, to do your migration of printers. Of course, you're going to need to figure out the naming. Do you have people that have hard-coded it? Those problems won't go away, and those problems can only be addressed by planning properly. I'm a big fan of using group policies. GPP, Jewish Policy Preferences, to push servers or to push printers, depending on the sites that you're in. For example, one of the last companies we worked with, we set up that every floor in the building was its own subnet. And even at some points, depending on the size, floors would be several subnets. Each subnet is an AD site. Put in a GPP onto the site that pushes the printer whenever you log on. So you get your machine, you get there, you turn it on, you log on to the domain, you're in site A, automatically the printers from site A get installed. You go to the next day, you're in site B, you turn on your machine, you log on, all the printers for site B are installed. The tools are there, use them. Stop. In a lot of cases, people use login scripts, and then they end up with a login script that's just 600 lines long. Is that the case? I heard some giggles. Use group policies. It will save you a lot of time, and especially if your environment is well-defined in terms of subnetting and sites, you can use that to push the appropriate servers, and that way avoid the problem that you would get when your printers are hard-coded. So now I'm in printers. Okay, I've got my default printer here, but in print management, if I migrate to printer, I will export from a print server on the network that is called 2K3FS. Yep, okay, it found it. It found that I have on this a Xerox, and an office jet. Those are the two printers I showed you earlier in my map, my network map. They're networked printers. They're installed on that box, and these are the drivers that are connected to it. So fine, okay, it says, yeah, I got all that information. Where do you want to export this? So I'm going to put it into the same area as the others. Create a directory for printers. 2K3. I'm going to save that. It's going to go out. It's going to talk to the other print server. It's going to figure out what they're called. Are they shared? Which drivers are they using? What IP address and ports they're using? It's going to figure all that information out. Going to put that into this file. And then I say, OK, once it's finished, right now it's saving the printer ports. Once it's finished, we do it in reverse. We go back to that same console, migrate printers. Once the printers are migrated, you pick the file that we've just created. It'll go create all the printers, create all the now we're going to import it, create all the information that we have, 2K3, yes, it's reading it. Oh, these are the printers I need to install, these are the drivers that I need to go get, these are the ports and information that I have, yes, I want to do it on this print server. I'm going to overwrite existing drivers if I have some local or keep them, that's depending on you, that needs to happen in your testing, in your assessment. Whether or not the new or the print drivers that you have will be done. I'm going to list the print servers that are previously listed. Done. Click Next. And import the settings, and those printers will all be migrated. We're essentially done. Now, the name resolution will not change. The problem, I mean the name resolution, because now those servers are no longer on WAC 2K3-FS WAC printer. They're going to be on WAC W2012R2-FS WAC printer. So if anybody's hard-coded that into their own workstation, a CNAME will help, so we'll redirect. If somebody's hard-coded the IP address, because I've done that in the past, somebody's hard-coded the IP address, same thing. Go to that machine and add that secondary, that IP address to your machine only after you've decommissioned the original. And it takes a little while. It imports the driver. It goes and figures it out. If it needs to, we'll go and download the drivers. So we've migrated our printer drivers. So in the span of, I've got 3 minutes left. In the span of 75 minutes, we have migrated AD, file and prints, DNS, DHCP. And our printers and the DFS. So, of course, this is a very small environment, but it's just going to give you an idea that it's not that complicated. It's mainly supported by the amount of work you'll do ahead of time, which is your planning and your assessment. So, what's next? Now what? Remember your pledge. You've all promised to do your due diligence. I heard you. Well, not really, but you know what I mean. Identify your service to migrate. Figure out, do I need to keep them internally or can I leave them and have them elsewhere on the cloud, for example? Like we already talked about this. This is an opportunity. There is actually, if you're looking at moving to the cloud, there's a session tomorrow, so DCIM B376 tomorrow afternoon. We'll talk about 2003 end of life and migrating your workloads to the cloud. So it's kind of like the sister session to this one. This one was like migrating your foundation services, but now tomorrow about this, the workloads on them, if you're looking at migrating them to the cloud, that's a great session to go to. Session resources, these will be available in the deck. CanITPro.net, I forgot to say at the beginning, I am half of the CanITPro.net team. This is my blog for me and my partner, Anthony Bartolo. And all but one of the demos that you've seen here are documented in step-by-step fashion. with screenshots and information, links to the tools that you need, links to TechNet articles that talk about this stuff. So you can go there and download or and view all that information after when you get back to your own environment. So there's tons of information on there, canitpro.net. It's the same hashtag if you want to follow us whenever we put in a new article, the canitpro hashtag to follow us. And the mandatory resource, Channel 9, fantastic resource, great of information and very entertaining, run by my good friend at the back there, Mr. Rick Claus with the hat. And my Microsoft Learning, TechNet, TechNet Virtual Labs, great, great, that's not actually listed here. But Microsoft, just do a search for Microsoft TechNet Virtual Labs, sandboxed environment that are live in VM form. They're not click-throughs. They're actually live machines that you can work with and test things. And just if you're not completely, not happy, but confident about what you need to do, great, great resources. MVA, Microsoft Virtual Academy, and MSDN, these are all resources that are free, that are available to you on demand whenever you need them. So please complete your evaluation and let me know how I did. I know this was the last session, and I am 27 seconds before the end. So evaluate this session, and remember, one is bad, four is good. I have seen evals in the past that went 1-1-1-1-1-1, and the verbatim said, this was great, I learned a lot, thank you very much, we'll see you next time. One does not mean we're number one. So thank you, and if you guys can't give us flowers, tell me why. Tell me what I can do it better. What content would you like? Do you like this type of sessions? Let us know, because that way, next Tech Ed, we'll put some up again. On that note, my name is Pierre Roman. I'll be around for a little bit longer if you want to have some questions, some discussions. I thank you very much to have stayed up to 6:15 on the third day. Thank you.